Ladies and gentlemen, Caucasian and Melanin, welcome to the CISO C-Show podcast. I'm your host for the day, Utkar Sham Butkar, and with me is my very special guest, Mr. Andrew Steven. Big fan of your work, bro. I'm so happy you could join me today. Fine, go ahead.
How are you doing?
I'm great, man. I'm lying to you. I'm so tired.
What happened?
Well, we made a plan to do this podcast, and I was like, we'll do it at 10 in the morning because I wake up early and we got stuff to do. But that was a decision made in a world before NBA 2K17. And ever since I got that game 48 hours ago, I've been playing it like a crack fiend.
Is it something about the game, or like, is it sports? Are you a video game person?
I think my biggest dream in life, I'm living out my backup plan right now, because the first plan was to be the first Indian American NBA superstar. But it is, you know, I don't play video games except for NBA 2K17 or NBA 2K,
the series.
And I cannot stop playing because it brings me so, so much joy. And I played till like 4:30 in the morning. I don't know. It's a real hustle. And I think it's like anything. You have to like get into it, become part of the culture, meet like-minded individuals who enjoy it as well, who can talk about it. Like, if you're playing in a vacuum, it's not nearly as fun as when you have a community to share it with.
Totally.
That's why, like, I mean, I read comic books and I go to the comic book shop every Wednesday as much to talk to the guys at the store as to get the books themselves, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you didn't know from that intro, today on the show we have
Utkar Shambutkar. You might know me from Pitch Perfect. I play Donald. You might know me from the Mindy Project. I play Rishi. I was recently in Barbershop: The Next Cut. I don't remember my character's name in that. And then I'm on the CISO show, Freestyle Love Supreme, and what else? Lots of other stuff, which we'll get into if you keep listening.
Seriously, he's doing a better job of hosting than I am. But having a different host or being out-hosted on my own podcast isn't the only thing that might feel different in this episode. I spend a lot of time working on these episodes, and I hope it shows. But part of my process is I'm always looking to tell the most interesting or intriguing story to me at that moment. You know, I'll prepare and I'll research and I'll come into an interview with an idea in mind, but I'm also open to going in a different direction. And so a lot of times the story comes together in the edit. In fact, I'm quick to tell every guest that the show is very edited.
Okay.
So if you misspeak or don't want something included, you can just let me know and I'll cut it out. And then I usually have people start with a just sort of introducing themselves.
Sure.
And like a title.
Great. Hi, everyone.
And for example, that little 30 seconds of cutting back and forth between me narrating and the actual recording from the interview took about 5 minutes to edit. And now this style of production isn't new. I didn't invent it, obviously. If you listen to any shows like Radiolab or This American Life, it's obvious sometimes where my influences cross over into ripping off. But at the same time, some of my favorite podcasts, the ones I listen to and look forward to most on any given week, are much more just live-to-tape, free-form conversations. And so this episode, while it still is edited and while there's still a story, it also has a lot of tangents that I wanted to include as well. It's also probably the most personal episode that I've ever done, which I'm not afraid to talk about myself or share about myself, and if anything, for fear of oversharing, I probably end up cutting too much of myself out of these episodes. So, with all that being said, I hope you find something interesting in this episode as well. And with that, welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven.
So, I decided to become an actor when my basketball career failed. I signed up for a school play, or my mother signed me up, or my friend signed me up. It doesn't matter. It was Taming of the Shrew in high school. And I sort of just took to it like a fish to water. I had moved to a new county for school. It was in the middle of eighth grade. I was very uncomfortable. I was very awkward. I had come from a school where I had friends from childhood and felt comfortable and was starting to get the attention of the opposite sex, which is very important to a 13, 14-year-old kid. And I was known as the funny man, you know, singer, rapper, all that stuff. And I came to a new environment, which is a totally different culture. It was a totally different monetary background, like just a different way of doing things. And I felt really out of place. And I felt like I didn't have any friends. And it's weird when you go from like the in crowd, which is everyone because you grow up with everyone, yeah, to being an outcast and like, you know, carrying your lunch tray around, like just hoping that you can find somewhere to sit. So I joined theater and I got a little bit of attention and some positive response. And I started doing every dance competition and everything at school. And at that time, our morning announcements were televised. So I'd find any reason to get on there and perform. And somewhere around my junior year of high school, I realized or was told or came to the great epiphany that I might have something special. It certainly felt very special to me.
Yeah.
And I was getting a lot of recognition and not respect, because I don't know that I behaved in a way that would garner that word, but just attention, I think, honestly. Like I was put in a place where I felt empowered and where I felt inspired and where I felt like a leader. Like I was the theater leader. Yeah. I was the king of the, not king, but I was the spokesperson for the misfits. And as such, like me and my fellow underdogs packed the theater and we had a wonderful time and it was really cool. And I think I fell in love with it and girls started paying attention to me. And I think that's a big part of it too, is like that romance and the backstage and coming together and the camaraderie and the fellowship of creating something with people and knowing everyone's life stories and helping each other up and being in a position where I felt special, mm-hmm, and could make other people feel special. And that was really cool for me. And so I wanted to go to school and my parents were totally against it. Not because they're not supportive, but because an Indian kid in 1998 saying that saying he wants to be an actor is like, you know, it's like a cow saying that he wants to be a chemical engineer. It's just like, I'm sure there's a bovine out there who can do it. But it has not been done yet. And yeah, at that time, Apu on The Simpsons was the only Indian on television. Shortly after that, Cal Penn came out with Harold and Kumar and Go to White Castle. There was Ajay Naidu from Office Space. There was Asif Manvi on The Daily Show. There were definitely men out there working, but my parents had no context. So they said, all right, you can audition for schools and you also have to apply to a bunch. So I applied to like 17 colleges, wow, or some shit like that, which is unheard of.
Yeah. I mean, just the application fee alone, yeah, makes you not want to.
It was incredible. It was horrible. And then I auditioned for all the big ones, Carnegie Mellon, USC, UCLA, Syracuse, NYU. And I really wanted to go out to LA and I had a chance to go to USC or New York University. And I was seeing a girl who was going to, God, where did she end up going? Miami of Ohio. So I was like,
wait, Miami of Ohio?
Yeah, my high school sweetheart. Are they your sweetheart if you don't stay together?
I'm still confused about Miami of Ohio.
There's a university called Miami of Ohio.
What does that even mean?
I don't know, dude. Fucking Google it after this. Can you say high school sweetheart if you didn't stay together?
I don't know. That is a good question. She was your sweetheart in high school.
She was the girl in high school who kept me in New York because I thought we were going to stay together, yeah, and I didn't go to LA. So I went to NYU to Tisch, which is a school of some repute at the time. And I started acting. I started going to acting school at the Stella Adler Conservatory about 2 years in. I became super focused on hip hop. I was doing party raps, like we'd freestyle,
yeah,
at parties. And then I was like, oh, I should really, really study this. Like I should pull out a notebook and I should read and write this all day, every day. I should write hip hop plays. I should write raps. I should freestyle literally every chance I get. I should speak in rhyme. I should create a new language where all you do is speak in rhyme. I should create games based around this art form. And I started battle rapping at that time, which is like 8 Mile. Like, I'd go to a club, I would just sit in the corner and I'd watch people. It made it hard to be a part of the community. That outcast thing has always sort of carried me, for better or worse, through life. Like, maybe it's the only child thing, maybe it's insecurity, maybe it's some sort of inferiority complex, not feeling like I belong. But I'm generally in situations like that. It's also hyper-competitiveness. I'll sit in the corner and I'll watch people and I'll size them up, not in a negative way, but just to see where I can fit in and beat them. It's not mean. It's just practical.
How are you going to beat me right now?
I'm not going to. I am not that dude anymore.
You did start hosting the show before I even sat down.
So. I know. I apologize.
No, it's great. But it speaks of what you're talking about.
I suppose that's just for my brain right now, because I'm so tired to be like, listen, dude, like,
Let's get this over with.
No. Get in. Be here. Be present.
Yeah.
How do I trigger myself to become present in this moment? But I'm battling and I'm doing well. I lost not a lot, but I did lose. And the losses are the only ones I remember. I barely remember the wins. But at that time, what happened? Maybe I'm fast forwarding. I'm a junior in college, I'm about to graduate a year early because I had those AP credits. Thanks, Mom and Dad. And I got into a play called History of the Word. I got an agent and stuff like that. That's a great story, too, but it's, should I tell it?
Sure.
So, around my sophomore year of college, I was like, I'm going to the New Eureka Poets Cafe. I'm rapping. Now I'm in college, and now I see, like, Charles Barkley says, like, when I was in high school, I had like a big game against, the next best player in Alabama. And I thought to myself, I'm a pretty good high school basketball player. So that was like me in high school. Like, we sold out the theater. Like, I saw that I was operating at a different level than some of my peers. And I was like, I'm a pretty good high school actor. And Charles Barkley gets to college. He goes to Auburn, and he has a huge game against one of the big schools, right? He puts up 30 and 20 or something like that, and he goes, I'm a pretty good college player. Maybe I could do this professionally. And so I'm in college, and I'm seeing what my peers are doing, when it comes to, like, professional acting and professional performing, your mindset, your confidence, your perspective means just as much as your talent. And I was, observing my peers, and at that time, around 18, 19, I was like, I can do this professionally. Like, this I know I can do now. If I'm at NYU at Tisch and I'm feeling this way, like, it's time to go pro. So I told my parents I wanted to drop out of college. I was like, I'm done. When you tell that to two Indian PhDs, and they're not going to take it very well. And I appreciate them telling me and making me, forcing me to finish my degree very much, because I'm sure that extra year and a half of life experience that I had at NYU was invaluable. Time will tell and reveal more things as I remember them, mm-hmm. as they actually are, and not in the petulant way that I experienced them. But summer before my senior year of college, right, I graduated a semester early. I took an on-camera acting class at the Stone Street Studios the first week on a Friday. I met Heather Finn from Frontier Booking International. It just so happens that the names were flipped, so the top of the alphabet went last. So I went last. And I walked into see Heather Finn, and I was like, fuck acting. I was like, I'm done with this shit. I'm going to be a fucking hip-hop artist. I'm going to be a poet.
Why were you feeling that way towards acting?
Because college at that time ruined it for me. I'm a fucking brown dude in a pretty much all white school. I'm also like not black. So if like I can be black adjacent, I can associate and speak. If we have a common language of hip hop, I can speak to anyone. But in terms of race and culture, like Indian is very different. Mm-hmm. It's totally different than black, and it's totally different than white. And if I try and be black, at a certain point, they will go, you can't get this far. And same thing with white people. And same thing if they came into my circle, right? So it got to be, you know, about my skin color. Because I got this beautiful brown skin. It looks good under lights. Great. If the teacher is telling students that you're a good actor because your brown skin looks good under lights, you're fucked. You know, if you pour your heart and your soul into your work only to have it picked apart by your peers because of the lighting or the stage choices or your vocal choices or everything technical, there's no life. Yeah. What is the point? I got on stage when I was 14 years old and I looked into the crowd, which you're not supposed to do. I didn't know that. I looked into the crowd and I saw a woman who was upset start to smile when I began speaking. That's why I do what I do. I do it to move people, to move them from a place of emotion to another, be that from happy to sad, sad to happy, whatever it is. We do it to change people's experience. You know, we do it to change their heart, to build, to inspire, to like that shit in fuego. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't do it to bring it down.
To wonder.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah, we're here to facilitate the possibility, like dreams, you know?
Yeah.
Why would I want to be in an institution that's trying to crush that? Also, if you're a funny dude at acting school and if you're listening to this, don't let them break you, man. Fuck with them. Like, if you know you're funny, fuck with them. They might want you to do Chekhov. They want you to do Ibsen. They want you to do Shakespeare. That's great. Learn it. The classics are important. Learn the language. Learn how it feels in your mouth. Learn how to spit that shit because it's important. But don't let them tell you not to be funny. That broke my spirit. Dude, I'm like 20 years old and I'm like, I can't be funny anymore. I'm legit telling myself I refuse to be funny anymore. I got to be serious Daniel Day-Lewis motherfucker. Well, that shit's fucking miserable.
And you can't be yourself.
Well, it's about authenticity, right? Like, yes, if you are a serious dude who's got your head in the books and really, really is like, can't take a joke and doesn't want to, or understands humor but doesn't find it funny, more power to you, man. But school really fucked with me.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to this agent thing, I was really ready to bounce. When a teacher sat in front of me and was like, Utkarsh, do you want to be one of these guys who's making $1 million a year on a sitcom? Or do you want to be a real actor? And I looked at him and I was like, are you really asking me this question, dude? You're sitting in a studio on a plastic chair asking me, who's come from suburban Maryland, first generation American, if I want to make $1 million being on a TV show or be a real fucking actor while you're talking about how my skin color looks under these lights. Get the fuck out of my face.
Yeah.
And man, I just ranted so hard.
No, I think it's really...
I apologize.
I mean, I obviously have a very different story because I'm a very different person.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot there that I can relate to that I'm sure other people can relate to too.
Well, how do you relate to it?
So I've talked about this a little bit before, but... like, I grew up very conservative, like, Christian, Orange County, suburbia.
Uh-huh.
And I was in music, and I was in bands, and I was doing, like, Christian music and stuff like that. And as I got older, and as I experienced more of the world and traveled around and met more people, there's this side of me that struggled, that wanted to push against some of the identity that I had held on to that I was for so long
at home.
Yeah. But in that process doing it, you know, I wanted to be sort of an advocate of change, of sort of like, you know, what's a be the change you want to see in the world. You know, like I used to say, be the change you want to see in the church. Like,
oh,
like there's a lot of shitty stuff that's going on here. The way they treat certain people, the oppression against, gay people, against women, against people of color, et cetera, just historically throughout the a lot of evangelical Christian churches.
Yeah.
But then they've also done great things like build hospitals and schools, you know, and stuff like that,
right.
and trying to balance a lot of that stuff. And so I got to a point in creating art and creating music where I was wanting to do, I didn't want to do half-hearted, feel good, which is what pretty much all of Christian music is
whoa,
these days.
Whoa, Jesus, alive in me.
Yeah. And so I was starting to write, I don't know, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but stuff that I was dealing with. It's long story short, now I'm the one rambling.
No, that's okay. How old are you?
I'm 30.
You're 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're around the same age.
How old are you?
I'm 32.
What do you want to say?
No, that's fine. I'm
30
32.
Also or 30 number
32. 30 deuce. 30. I am 2 years older than you.
Yeah.
When's your birthday?
March 18th.
Oh, you just turned 30. 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I don't know what day it is. 2K. Well, the authenticity thing is hard, man.
But yeah. So, and especially in.
So it's constantly changing, man, based on everything. Like, so, I mean. It's a struggle. It's a struggle when you come up in different cultures. You know, nobody's in a bubble. You could have stayed in Orange County and probably been much more simple, maybe much more money. You might have been more content even. You might have been happier in your little bubble. Like if my parents had stayed in India, I would have grown up somewhere in South India and I would have not had to endure any kind of racism or prejudice. And I would have been one of many. And who knows what that would that have inspired me to be unique, or would it have made me, you know, go work at not the equivalent of Ford? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, would I have been happy? Would I be married now with four kids? Would I have a mustache? You know what I'm saying? Like, what?
You could have a mustache if you wanted.
No, I can't. My dad has a mustache. It's too close to home.
You have some facial hair.
I got the beard, bruh. I got that.
But you could just shave off and easily have a mustache.
No. But yeah, like, look, like when what I was saying is that dude who took that on camera class and walked into this meeting with this agent, that dude was authentically tired of acting. That guy was like, fuck this shit. I'm a rapper. I eviscerate MCs. I'm a poet and I do hip hop theater. That's what I do. And take it or leave it if you want. But the bottom line is I have this degree and I can make you a shit ton of money if you want. And that's the point, right? Mm-hmm. At that point, that's like what my mindset was. That's like a really sad mindset to have for a 20-year-old kid. Like the inspiration was kind of gone. I mean, some people might say, whoa, that's so business-minded and so this and that. But it really came from a place of... not surrender, but defeat.
Were you thinking, whether it was true or not, were you thinking the music side of you was being true to who you are, and the acting side was you were having to compromise who you were?
Yeah, I should have just said that. That was really good. And it still is that way to this day. When you try and monetize anything, it becomes very difficult to know what's real and what isn't.
Yeah.
That's the challenge. That's why we go to therapy. That's why we talk to like-minded individuals. That's why we seek counsel from people who have been there before us. Because when you're in it, it's hard to tell up from down. You're like, well, they want me to do this and I can do this. For me, it's like, do I do an accent here? Is an accent allowed? Like, what is the justification? If I do it, if I play this cab driver, you know what I mean? Like if I play this asexual role, is it going to hurt South Asians as a whole? What is the overall global impact of me doing this one tiny line in this small show? And then I got to call someone and they'll be like, dude, do you need to eat? Like, yes. And I'm like, all right, man, well, do it.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, Margaret Perry, who's a great director in New York, told me there's three tenets to taking a job. One is the people that you're working with. Two is the project itself. And third is the money. And if two out of the three got the buzz, got the check, then you take the job. And that's always been my sort of my whatever you call it. That's what I do. So I go in and I start reading this scope copy, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, your breath can smell fresh, blah, 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 blah. And she was like, okay, let's do this again. And I was like,
if you want your breath to be fresh, take Scope and it'll be fucking awesome.
And she's like, dude, you can't say fuck in an audition. And I was like,
I don't care about this. Who gives a shit about this? I'll make you money. I'm an Indian. You need Indians. I'm a rapper. Here's a flyer to my battle.
And I gave her a flyer for my Monday night battle, thinking like I was being an asshole. Like I was really coming from a place of like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck all this. Goodbye, goodbye, good day, good day.
It wasn't, you weren't so proud of your other stuff. You were wanting to be an asshole.
No, I was being a brat.
Yeah, burning the building down behind you.
Yeah. And when I said I'm a rapper and I'm a poet, her eyes lit up like dinner plates. And she was like, you do what? And I was like, this is going in a different direction than I thought it would. Fast forward, you know, I was the last audition, so I walked out of the building with her. She offered me a cigarette. I'd smoked maybe 3 cigarettes in my life. I took that Parliament light and I choked it down. And 3 days later, they signed me to Frontier Booking International. Office as big as this table, maybe a little bit bigger with 3
this
desks.
This is a really huge table for the listeners.
Yeah,
so it's about 3 city blocks, this table.
Oh, I just made your mic blow out. And then my first theater gig, I believe, was this show, History of the Word, which was done at the Crossroads Theater in Rutgers. And it was where I met Orrin Wolf, who was the producer of that show. And Orrin Wolf came to one of my rap battles because I was still doing that. And he said, you know what? You got to meet these guys that have this show called Freestyle Love Supreme. If you meet Orrin, you don't think he has his finger on the pulse. So, I mean, I love you, Orrin, but at the time I was like, okay, let's meet these guys. Mm-hmm. And I was prepared to be completely underwhelmed.
Yeah.
But obviously, now I'm talking to you 11 years later, and we have a TV show.
How about we get something that is important to you? Something that you love or something that inspires you?
Selfies.
Selfies. Inspire you. Money inspires you. What is it?
Sunrises.
Sunrises. Oh, that's nice. Sunrise. Ladies and gentlemen, the word is sunrise. Oh, everything you are about to hear is true.
This is a clip from Freestyle Love Supreme, the TV show.
Sunrise, sunrise. Wake up in the morning, I can't believe my eyes. Nothing makes me feel so good as a sunrise.
Sunrise,
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 sunrise.
Okay, growing up in Maryland as an Indian. Struggling, juggling, education, and trying to get a girl to remember my name. Hard game, when you skinny with a brown colored frame in the middle of the world and you can't get a girl and you can't get good grades and everything you make is high stakes and I don't know what to say and I look it in the face and I go to outer space cause I want to run away. What do I do? These people don't even know what is a Hindu. Are you black or are you white? We can't tell what color. Man, I always felt like I'm an other. So I went to a father, went to my mother. Looked him in the eye, said I'm tired of this disguise. Tired of feeling low. They looked at me and said, son, you gonna grow. Son, you gonna rise. Son, you gonna grow. Son, you gonna be whatever you want, bro. Son, you gonna be on stage being a pro. Spitting all day upon the microphone. Son, you gonna rise. Son, you gonna fly. Son, you gonna reach the sun, moon, and the skies. Son, you gonna be the one we proud of. So say your name even louder. Sunrise.
I want to circle back on some themes there. There's this interesting dichotomy between sort of the outsider, outcast, and yet also still forming community. And like on its simplistic form, you mentioned just the idea of attention. And on its broader, more deeper, meaningful sense. Even talking about the video games, like talking about being a part of a group that's larger than you, being part of this family, part of this group.
It's a daily challenge for me to isolate or to engage with the world. I'm an only child. I'm fine being in my own mind. I'm also fine being extremely self-centered and selfish and allowing my narcissism to run rampant, which is to say, like, you are a character in my play. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
As opposed to seeing you as an equal.
We're both characters in someone else's play.
Yeah, exactly. That's such a nice way to put it. That's why when I was talking, and was like, well, why am I treating this like it's... like I'm the star of this show. That's not interesting to me. What's interesting is a conversation. Yeah. Like, how do we collaborate? You're sitting here alone in a vacuum, right? You shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't be like, I should be here with you. But that's the challenge, yeah. Right? And it generally takes me about, like it did just now, about 5, 10, sometimes 15 minutes to be like, there's somebody else here. Especially when it's like, right now, it's the equivalent of like 6 a.m. for me since I was playing NBA 2K.
It's so interesting because like you know that about yourself, but it seems like you're talking with equal intensity about the importance of sort of being in these communities.
Well,
these groups of people.
I mean, I'm sure you know too. You have no podcast without me. I'm not like I have no podcast without you. Like the collaboration is so important. And it's been a systematic daily, it usually recharges every morning, breaking down of my ego. So like every day you wake up and you go, how can I help other people? Like, what can I do? How do I reach out? How do I be a part of something bigger than myself? Mm-hmm. And how do I contribute? Now, that's very hard in an abstract sense, but in a creative sense, like with Freestyle Love Supreme, in art, it's very easy. You just say, hey, what do you think? What do you think? Oh, I have this idea. Well, I have this idea. Okay. Yes. Let's try it. That's mm-hmm. the first thing. That's the first phrase. Okay. Let's try it. The worst phrase is no. Mm-hmm. Best phrase is just let's try it. Okay. Let's see what we can do.
So right. When I'm feeling cold, I got this puppy that is 3 years old. We found her on the beach in the Dominican Republic. We weren't looking for a puppy, but we love it. It came up to us, it bit my wife's ankle, it looked at me and was like, give me food, thank you. Oh, we couldn't leave it there. We combed out the nicks and ticks out of its hair and we brought it home. And now every morning at the break of dawn, I get this butt in my face, or this kiss in my face, or this puppy in my face. And oh my gosh, I would never trade its place for nothing. It was an unplanned surprise, but every morning she and I have a front row view of the sunrise.
With Freestyle Love Supreme, I've learned so much about myself, both as a young man coming into regular man, mm-hmm. and then as an artist, and how much I've grown as a result of working with Tommy Kail, Anthony Venizialli, Lynn, Chris Jackson, Chris Sullivan, Bill Sherman, and Arthur Lewis, as well as James Monroe Englehart and David Diggs and Andrew Jelly Donut Bancroft and Wade Elaine Marcus, I thank God that I met these guys. Like, really, even if Hamilton never happened or In the Heights never happened, and we were still Freestyle motherfucking Love Supreme, we'd still be selling out shows. Mm-hmm. Like, we're dope. But I know that my place in that group has evolved and changed and adapted to the needs and the direction that was given to me. So let me give you an example. When I show up into the group, I'm a battle rapper. Uh-huh. So the guys joke with me. Like my first rhymes always were, ladies and gentlemen, Caucasian and melanin, the Indian coming through, spitting from Maryland, every time. That was it. Mm-hmm. It's a freestyle show. So why am I doing the same rap? In the beginning. And then I go, you know, I'm the best. I never settle for less. I'm the one with the girls rubbing on their breasts and the chest. And they'd be like, did you say you were going to go to second base with a girl? Like, that's, the word was turnip. And it was like, my default was very much in line with the braggadocio dick swinging aspect of rap. Mm-hmm. And when that came to the Freestyle Love Supreme format, it just transferred over. I was like, I can play these games, I can do this shit, and I'm dope. And I'm going to tell the world how dope I am. And Tommy Kail pulled me aside and said, first of all, this is a freestyle show. So that tag is cute, but don't do it. Yeah. Like, challenge yourself. You know, you can, why don't you just see what happens if you dive into the deep end? Right now you're wading in and everyone else is in the deep end. And it's kind of not fair to you because you just joined the group and we've been doing this for a year and a half, 2 years. So we've gone through the growing pains that you're going through, but like, we need you to just jump into the deep end. Mm-hmm. And also, we know you're good. That's why you're here. If I'm hearing you talk about how good you are, I might as well go put on a Jay-Z record because he does it a lot better. What you can bring to the table is a knowledge of comic books, of NBA, of what it's like to be a South Asian American in this country, your relationship with your parents, the girls that you dated at all, your love of Jean-Claude Van Damme. If you can rap with as much quote unquote ego about a turnip as you can about yourself, I guarantee you, you will grow as an artist and the people in this room will respect you and give you naturally what it is you're forcing upon them. Does that make sense?
Totally. It's very interesting because you were talking earlier about, if I'm hearing you correctly, how this the music and the poetry was much more an authentic representation of yourself than the acting. But here you are doing music and rapping and hip hop and arguably not being authentic to who you are.
Yes. I think there was a lot of facade.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what was fun about it for me. Like when you go on stage and at a regular hip hop show and you're like, clap your hands, everybody, and you get to rock the chain and you're like, you're playing a part. But Freestyle Love Supreme, there's no parts. It's you.
Rather than presenting yourself as you want to be, you're maybe presenting yourself as you vulnerably are.
Exactly. Exactly who you are. Who are you? Who are these nerds, man? Who are these dudes who love each other unconditionally and aren't afraid to show it? The greatest two words that you can hear are me too. Like, if you're going through anything, man, and you're never going to hear that if you don't share it.
Yeah.
And that's like the best thing, right? Oh, I feel like this and I can't go out and I'm obsessed with my own. I mean, this is just, I don't know if this is true, but I'm just saying it. Like, I'm obsessed with my own mortality and like, I'm like afraid of everything, blah, 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 blah. And then you just sit with someone and they go, me too. You want to rap about it? And you go, yeah, why the fuck not? And in 30 seconds, fear becomes action, and action leads to laughter and joy and that community, man. It's fellowship. Yeah. It's being there with other human beings. I don't have the cheat code to this 3D hologram that we're living in, so I just have to take this at face value.
Yeah.
But the most potent and best thing about it is like, is us being able to share, you know, a moment with each other. That's like pretty simple, and they've been saying it for thousands of years. Like, I can't reinvent the wheel on that one. But for me, like, just sharing and knowing that my crazy thoughts are actually not that unique. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of comforting, yeah. You know? And when I get the crazy, boring thoughts out the way that I think are so unique, and I'm like, oh, okay, so that's mundane, like fear and, you know, blah, 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 anxiety and all that shit and self-worth and low self-esteem and blah, 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 waking up, you know, feeling weird. That's boring. Mm-hmm. When I get that out of the way and I remove the perception that that's actually interesting, then actual interesting thoughts come, right? Then I open up my imagination to be inspired in crazy cuckoo ways, and then fun and really exciting things happen that are actually joyful and actually unique to me, that are the only things I can bring to this world. And then I share that with someone else and they go, holy shit, I would have never thought of that. What about this? And I go, what the fuck? I never thought of that. And then, you know, and we build because we get rid of all the thoughts that we think are so important that are actually holding us back.
That's beautiful.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
I really do. I'm overly sentimental. So I apologize if this has been too serious or introspective.
No, it's. I mean, this is like, unfortunately for some people, how I operate all the time. I don't know how else to.
I'm the
to
same
talk.
Way. I'm definitely not like slapstick or anything like that. And I probably err on the side of being too introspective. But no, I love everything you're saying, and I think it's a good. I think it's a good message that, like you said, it's not new. But to be reiterated time and time again, especially for creative people.
The show's called Freestyle Love Supreme. I mean, we're here to talk about the show to some degree, right?
It's bigger than that.
Well, what are you afraid of?
Abandonment.
Yeah, that's a big one for me. You have siblings?
Yeah, I'm the youngest of two older brothers. I'm afraid of not creating something of value or worth.
Legacy.
Not necessarily, like, more for, like, the legacy of today or tomorrow, not, like, after I die.
I got you. That's big on me, too. That's huge.
I feel like I'm not doing enough to, like, I try to add good to the world. And it can be as stupid as a silly, dumb pun and as broad as, like, solving world hunger or something.
Right.
That's very pretentious of me to say that I'm. My biggest fear is that I'm not doing enough to create good. But you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to add to the noise. I want to add to the good.
But that's something that, I mean, any conscious artist is going to run into. Like, what is my purpose? What am I doing with this? And grandiose thoughts naturally will come with that.
I'm obsessed with meaning.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Well, it's like, I think everything's meaningful, but then if that's true, that means nothing's meaningful because then everything's...
No, that's don't go there. That's like some Camus stranger shit. You don't do that.
But no, I just like, I want to create stuff that matters. I want to be around people that are creating stuff that matters, and I want to help people create stuff that matters.
Do you meditate?
Not like, I've never done like, I mean, outside of a couple like guided meditations and stuff like that. I get away. Like, I love hiking and getting away in nature and just getting alone with my thoughts. And
you have the ability to get quiet though.
Yeah.
Do you still pray?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Sorry. I don't know if you're...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I used to think there comes a time in people's journey where, and only they can judge this for themselves, is can you fix this from the inside out, or do you need to tear it all down before you can rebuild?
Yeah.
You know? Pete Holmes talks about sometimes you need to take all the furniture out of the room before you can redecorate.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
And I think where a lot of people stop is after they tear it down and they never start the rebuilding process because it's hard.
Right. It's very difficult.
And so I'm somewhere in there personally in between. I've already torn down and I'm maybe starting to rebuild, but that's sort of where I'm in my journey.
Are you speaking specifically about prayer or just in your life?
All the above.
I mean,
Christianity was such a part of my identity for so long. That,
yeah.
You know, I would say probably for strongly for 20 years. And then it was really the last 10 that started the deconstruction.
Right. You know, well, first and foremost, like, there's no clock. Like, there's no, like, finish line. Mm-hmm. So you just. We rebuild in our own time.
Yeah.
And we take it. It's action. Thoughts take a lot more time than actions do.
Yeah.
Like, they're much more time consuming and they waste so much more energy than, like, you know, I thought about making my bed for 10 years. And now I started making my bed. And for the last 2 years, I've made my bed every morning.
Is that a real story?
Yeah, that's real. There's lots of examples of that in my life, but I will speak on when we were talking about getting quiet, when you have trouble, when I have trouble with questions of identity, right? Like, is this the right thing for me? Because it happens all the time. I don't really believe in Christianity. I don't believe in Hinduism unless aliens are real, because that's the only way to justify flying chariots and people with six arms and like superpowers and stuff like that. And Christianity and like Moses, like the Ark, like that's got to be some alien shit. Otherwise, that's not real. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's a myth. The same way that orange is the new black in 4,000 years is going to be seen as mythological, yeah. like, work.
Yeah.
Chandler and Joey are going to be fucking whatever. They're Ram season.
Is this a fanfic?
They're going to be, yeah, right? Anyway, that's not to say I don't believe in God.
Yeah.
Because I do. And I talk to God every day. And it starts off very slow for me. It's gotten more complex, but just, hey, thanks. Oh, no, wake up in the morning. Yeah, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, hey, thanks. Please just do what you got to do. Mm-hmm. I'm here if you need me. Take the wheel. Let's ride. And then at night, thank you. Much appreciated. Love my dog. Love bacon. Tell me what you need. Take the wheel. Good night. And that's where it starts. Like, very basic.
Yeah.
Not desperation prayers.
Oh, totally.
Not please God, if you do this for me, I won't ever do this again. I don't have my registration right now. If you can keep the cops off my back, I swear to God, I'll go to the DMV tomorrow. That's like very different. That's foxhole prayer.
Yeah.
And I get it. But for me, it helps in making these decisions to get super quiet with myself and allow the thoughts to come to me and also allow myself to feel taken care of. Because mm-hmm. that's the point of this idea of whether it's real or not of God. It's that we know there's a plan, which is comforting. We know that we're taken care of, which makes us feel safe, and that we are loved unconditionally, which allows us to walk through life, hopefully with a little less fear every day. And that really helps me when I make my decisions, because it helps me get connected with my intuition, which may be synonymous with what people think is God. It just gets me into a place, and it's a muscle. It mm-hmm. takes time to, some people have it. My dad has it. My dad has intuition. He knows right from wrong, black and white. He's never done a wrong thing. He's never done a thing he's regretted in his life. And he's amazing. I'm the total opposite. I fucking take hot, wet, steamy doo-doos all over my own life. And then I go, what did I do? Yeah. I just go, shit. That's too much. The pun went too far. but this idea of intuition and it being something I can develop has been really helpful.
Yeah.
And it just... it takes those quiet moments and just being like, you know, seeing each. I mean, if you're going to think about it and ruminate on it, it's like, okay, if I don't go, if I blow up, I play 2K till 4:30 in the morning. If I don't go to the improv and I don't see Andrew, or if I email him and I go, can we go at 11 or noon? If I just don't show up, what does that mean? Ultimately, it means I've wasted your time and my own and an opportunity to say yes and come have a conversation with you. And beyond that, the level of self-respect and integrity that I have and hold for myself starts to diminish, right? And when that starts to happen, my feelings of self-worth start to go down. And then that starts to happen. And maybe, you know, I blow off something else and it starts off a chain reaction. And the next thing I know, I'm not making my bed in a week. You know, so I think about it's that sensitive for me. I got to do the right thing or I will absolutely do the wrong one. Mm-hmm. And it's patterns and routines. I don't know if I'm being helpful at all or eloquent. Some people know what it's like to feel something bigger than themselves and to be connected to it. Some of you feel it when you see your kids or you kiss somebody. Since I started praying, my stress level has greatly decreased. Mm-hmm. Since I can just be like, whatever choice I make is the right one, as long as I'm not hurting anyone. Mm-hmm. Am I being honest and am I operating as a man of integrity right now? Okay, I'm good. Like, I'm good. whatever it is.
How did you get to here?
Huh?
Like, what brought you to that?
I had to rip everything to the fucking ground, dog. What do you think? I had to crash and burn. Fucking, I was in China. I was so low, man. I was like, and then I started listening to people's advice.
Mm-hmm.
And started making my bed and brushing my teeth and picking up the phone when people called and showing up to places on time and showing up when I said I would and being prepared and listening and asking how I could help, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. They've helped a lot. Yeah. Also, I think I'm a little bit older. I don't know, maybe.
Perspective.
Well, perspective is how you stay happy, because if you have a good perspective, that means you have gratitude, which means you're in probably a pretty good place. But how do you get, you know, how do you maintain a good perspective? You connect with other people. Mm-hmm. Some people are fucking crazy and you're happy you're not them. Some people are like Lynn and they're in GQ and they're winning Tonys, or Tommy, who just won an Emmy, or Bill Sherman, who's got a show with Questlove. And you go, oh my gosh, that's possible. My God, that's incredible. And then some people are just, and but, you know, it helps you stay in your own skin.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you stay your size, you know, not bigger or smaller than you really are.
That's great.
Does that make sense?
Totally. I love this. I hope you're okay with this.
I'm good. I mean, I don't know if we should talk about Freestyle Love Supreme or not.
I think we have. not to be overly cheesy, which is what I often am, but maybe not in the specifics, but in the bigger theme of things.
Well, you know, another way that, like, maybe I've reached some of these conclusions, these epic conclusions, is I have my own podcast, and it's called Let's Talk About Me, Baby. So there's this line, but I feel like an asshole saying this, but there's like a line in the Pitch Perfect where I go, let's talk about sex, baby. And I was like, I know most of these people are going to be coming initially because of Pitch Perfect, and which is now 5 years old, but it's still, it's like it came out yesterday, which is crazy. So I made the title, Let's Talk About Me, Baby. So stupid. And the idea was like, I'm going to bring more famous people on and friends of mine who have a following, and we're going to talk about how they met me, how they know me, what they thought of me, what their first impressions were, how I've grown on them or fallen off of them, and extrapolate something about my life that I could then relate to theirs and ultimately talk to them about their own experiences and what I can draw and learn from that. And I've realized, like, I've in the podcast, there's we've had Lamorne Morris from New Girl, Janina Gavankar, who's on Sleepy Hollow. Mm-hmm. We've had Bob Teitel, who produced all the Barbershop movies. We've had a Power Ranger. We've had a porn star. We've had Hasan Minhaj was today's episode from The Daily Show. David Diggs from Hamilton, Chris Jackson from Hamilton. So a lot of people, right, mm-hmm. who've experienced a ton of different things with me. And I've found through doing the podcast that a lot of my quirks, like I get angry. I get angry about racism in Hollywood. I rant and I rave and I complain. What is the point? By episode 25, I was like, I'm so sick of hearing this guy. But that helps. Mm-hmm. That helps me a lot. That's the whole point of the podcast. The whole point of the podcast is for fucking me.
Yeah.
You want to listen to it's up title. To you. But we have some amazing conversations about race and about sexuality, about gender politics, about fear, really. Everything with me is a conversation about what is fear and how do we get through it. And so I heard something last week which really helped. Fear is a mile high and a mile wide, but it's only paper thin. You see how I drop my voice too? It's pretty good, right? I mean, that's, it's hokey, really, but it helps. Because then you're just like, oh, if it's paper thin, if I just do it, it's done. Anyway.
How are you feeling now? You came in not feeling good.
I'm good, man. I'm just going to go eat a granola bar.
Go back to sleep?
Probably. Yeah, I'm going to pick up NBA 2K17. I'm going to go kick it with the dog and then hang out, man. It's good. I'm really, really glad that I got to come and talk to you.
And thank you for listening to the show this week. a little longer and a little deeper, I guess. I don't know. But like I said earlier, hope you found something interesting, something that you could take away. And I wanted to thank Utkarsh for being on the show again. If you want to check out his podcast, you can find it on iTunes or on the HeadGum Network.
Let's Talk About Me, baby.
And where else can people check you out?
A new season of Mindy Project is coming out. And look for Dimension 404 on Hulu. I don't know when that's coming out, but it's happening. And then Freestyle Love Supreme on CISO.
Are you guys doing a show?
We have a show September 30th in New York City, 5:30 p.m. and 8 p.m. or 8:30 p.m. Thanks to the Hamilton Mania. I guess how long it took for tickets to sell out.
2 minutes.
Lower.
1 minute?
Lower.
10 seconds.
15 seconds. Jeez. 15 seconds to sell these things out. I mean, we used to sell out in a day anyways, but yeah. 15 seconds. I don't know what it's going to be like, man. I went and saw that Hamilton show. That Hamilton show. I went and
you
saw...
You helped originate, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was there at the very, very beginning, which was super cool.
You were the first Burr.
I was the first Burr.
Or the second, I guess.
Who was the second?
You were. Burr, the original Burr.
Yeah, yeah. Burr. That guy. No one cares about him, though. Dumbass. Bye!